content of the following program is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, treatment, or cure. Always consult your physician or a health professional with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition. Go higher, baby. You're in the right place. You're listening to One Life Radio. This is Bernadette with Diamond Gray, Aviana Barrientos, and Daniel Tagg.
I'm back.
You're back.
I'm back.
You're back in gray, but yeah. We have black pants on.
I have black shorts on.
You have black shorts on, yeah. Yeah, I like that new logo, the Telos logo, the fitness where Daniel trains people and works them out and does all of his orthokinetics and biomechanics and muscle activation techniques.
Look at that.
Look at you. Look at you. And he also can kill you if you cross him, because he's belted in three different martial arts systems. So, and he knows how to kill a fire too.
I do. I do know how to kill a fire. I've never thought of it as killing the fire, but that makes it sound a lot cooler.
Yeah. Kill that fire.
Kill the fire.
That's right.
What did you say? It's not learning how to kill, it's learning how to not be killed.
As far as self-defense, yes.
Yeah.
Correct.
Gotcha. Yeah.
It's learning how to defend yourself, not how to hurt others.
Mm-hmm.
I'm against hurting others.
Well, I'm hoping that you can. I am too.
Yeah.
Ahimsa.
No one
baby.
Wants to no hurt
harm.
Anyone.
Well,
no
some
harm
people
to
do.
Anyone if you can help it. I mean, we all make mistakes and we're human. I was going to say to some degree. Actually, that's a dumb statement.
We are all human if we are human. In fact, humans.
We are the human species.
Yes.
But it's great to have you back.
Yeah, good to be back.
And it always is great to have Daniel in studio. We're going to be putting out a video here in a little bit. And we're talking about plyometrics because, you know, I think I know what this is, but I'm not sure. So
I have no clue.
It's explosive movements. You see a lot of people jumping up on boxes.
Gotcha.
And that's
I've
the plyometrics.
That. Yeah. Oh. I used to do a lot of that with Tina when I was in really good shape.
Yeah.
Man.
It's a great workout, great cardiovascular, great for muscles, but it's a higher risk. So we'll kind of talk about how to mitigate some of the risk and then when to do it.
Well, you know what? I might. I haven't worked out yet today because I was up so late last night. I'm going to work out when I get home. But could I do plyometrics, like on my steps, jumping up on steps?
You could. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Up. And I'll show you some different ways of how to do them versus just doing with two legs, doing with one leg. Like, when do we push off with two legs in everyday life? Not very often.
First, you got to get your legs really strong, though, to do that, I would think. So you don't want to, like, jack up your knee or anything.
Exactly. Like, you need to have some basic general strength and endurance, and you need to have decent stability and mobility before you know, plyometrics are kind of like the upper echelon of, you got the basics down, you got the good platform of strength and endurance and all that, and then you go to the next level is plyometrics. It's not something that an unconditioned person wants to do.
Oh, yeah, and you got to have good balance. You have to have strong core muscles. At least I did when I used to do them a lot. I'm pretty strong now, but of course I'm not as strong as I was when I was training with Tina. But Tina's actually moving back to Dallas, so she's going to start training me again.
Oh,
so
that's awesome.
I hope to be in really, really good shape in like 2 months.
Nice.
So we'll see. That's about how long I think it'll take for me to be able to kick some you-know-what.
Right. Now, that's exciting, though, for the summer.
It's a good plan.
It's always more motivating in the summer, though. The sun's out. You know, the weather's nicer.
But I'm looking forward to the fall. I'm already buying fall clothes.
Oh, same.
I am. I've already got a couple of little outfits stored, like a squirrel, you know, storing nuts. You know, seriously. I wore a flannel shirt yesterday over my Daisy Dukes and my T-shirt.
Oh, my goodness. I'm not thinking that far ahead. I'm enjoying the moment.
Yeah. You know what? That is so... I love summer, but I love football so much. I start to get antsy, and preseason starts in August, and I just love football, and it's too long of a break.
That reminds me of a friend. I enjoy football, but it's not my thing anymore.
Yeah. But, you know, I say it's too long of a break, but it's really not, because we don't want
to have... Summer training starts.
Yeah, summer
training.
Yeah. Well, I think they're training right now. I think summer training's already started, but, you know, it's kind of fun to only have, what is it, 13 games? 12, 13 games?
Something like
that. I thought it was 16.
Yeah, I thought it was 16.
You know what? You might be right. You're probably right. We're going to go with you, Daniel, because you're Dan the man, and I bet you know. But anyway, it just doesn't seem like it's enough games, so maybe that's why my memory is, or my brain is like putting it at a smaller number.
They're coming out with the XFL next year after the end of the season.
Yeah.
Vince is trying to put together a really upright organization where he's not going to let dirtbags in it, and he's not going to make it as hokey as it was last time.
Really?
I have a client that's kind of working on some different things on it with him.
Cool.
And it actually sounds like it could be kind of cool for an off-season football. Mm-hmm. Give you something entertaining. It's not going to be the NFL.
Yeah.
But it looks like it's going to be a lot better than what it was.
Yeah.
It was a joke before.
Yeah. Well, football's fun. It's a great sport. And for me, I don't know. I just find watching an hour of football, it's actually 3 hours, one game, an hour of the actual game is a lot like life sometimes.
A lot of teamwork. Individual.
Yep.
Process, but also strength. When I played it, I really enjoyed it.
Yep. And you win some and you lose some, right?
And a lot of times you learn more by losing.
Absolutely. Yep. And I love it. I really good to have you back in studio. I wanted to let you know that I will be in Mesquite tonight at the North Texas Vascular Center at 3220 Gus Thomason Road at the North Texas Vascular Center. Dr. Riz Bukhari is going to be there speaking, and I'm going to join them. And I'm actually giving away two $50 gift certificates I'm giving away.
Nice.
And those were those two sweet ladies that were in the studio last time I was here.
And they will be there tonight.
It's awesome. Their products taste great from the couple that I've had.
They're really good. Right? Yeah.
Well, and they're my personal ones that I have bought in order to give away. So because I think it's so important to eat more plant-based.
Well, and then find things that still taste good. I was talking about that. Like in the last 2 months, I've had one slice of pizza, and that was the only thing I've had remotely bad for me in the last 2 months.
It's just hard to give up pizza.
But once you find stuff that you enjoy that tastes good, there's no need to eat a whole bunch of junk food. Like, good food doesn't have to taste bad.
No, it doesn't. In fact, once you start eating healthy, you don't even want that other food. Like, I had a pizza over the weekend too, and it was really salty. Yeah. I could hardly eat it. Way too much salt in it. Yeah. Unless you make the dough yourself, and use really good flour, organic flour, ancient grains
just Italian flour.
Italian flour? Yeah, that's always the best, right?
It really is. I don't know the ancient grain one that you're talking about.
Well, there's several of them, amaranth, what is it?
Yeah,
there's a whole bunch of them, yeah.
They have all wacky names.
Yeah, wackadoodles. Yeah. But we have, speaking about of wackadoodles, we are talking about LSD today.
Oh, interesting.
With Dr. Dan Engel. He is he's board certified in psychiatry and neurology. We're going to be talking about the truths and the myths of psychedelics.
Ooh,
so specifically, I think we're going to be talking more a little bit about LSD. Some of these questions are super funny that I want to ask them, myth number one is dropping acid, will it make you a better person?
Nice.
I don't
almost immediately.
I wonder if he's going to talk about shrooms at all. I have a question that I always been wanting to ask.
Well, we're going to be talking about psychedelics in general, but yes, absolutely, psilocybin.
I had a college classmate that his roommate stabbed him to death many times, and they were doing shrooms. But I always assumed they were doing shrooms and other things, because I always thought you were kind of chill on shrooms. So I wanted to ask him, because they were doing that. It was in their system. They had it there, but it was this guy just went crazy.
This guy was just psychotic and went crazy happened to be on mushrooms. I don't know.
Maybe, but
was the guy killed?
Oh, yeah. It was like 67 lethal stabs.
Well, great.
67?
Something crazy like that. And the guy was he sat right next to me in class, and he was,
Let's talk about something nice.
Sorry.
You're like freaking me out. I'm like, oh, my God, you're killing me over here. Let's talk about the new truck that you got.
The new Jeep.
Let's talk about that. And the little buck.
Yes.
The baby buck that no one shot.
No.
Mother and father's front yard eating little crab apples.
Street, our neighbor's front yard. I come out, and right before I left to come back here from Colorado, I was going out to get my motorcycle ready, and I opened up the garage door, and across the street at the crab apple tree was this little buck in the velvet in Colorado. Yeah, just eating the crab apples.
What do you mean buck in the velvet? What
so
does that mean?
It's a buck, so it's a male deer.
Yeah, I know what buck means.
So
yeah.
The velvet is when their antlers are growing back, and they have this velvety, it's almost like hair. it's kind of hard. It's just, it's called velvet. It's not, it doesn't look as hard as it does when it's fully developed with its antlers.
Yeah, how often do they lose their antlers?
Once a year.
I know they use those for dog chews and stuff, don't they?
Yeah, they do.
And then isn't there some sort of deer antler powder that men claim makes
you bigger and stuff?
Makes you bigger and stronger.
I don't think it does, but it's like antler powder or something like that. I tried it once; it didn't do anything.
If you believe that it does,
it could, right?
It could have the placebo effect on your mind. But
that was good. But yeah, I got an old new Jeep, so it's a 1992 Willie Jeep with the 4-inch lift kit and 33-inch tires, and a whole bunch of work that needs to be done on it, which is half the fun.
Yeah, that is half the fun, isn't it?
It's got a straight 6 engine on it. It's room you can actually put your hands in there and work around.
It's a fixer upper.
It is a fixer upper.
Guys in their cars.
Oh, so much fun. I'm having my brother-in-law, who's a mechanic, great guy to have his brother-in-law. Mm-hmm. He's working on the front axle right now because it's not quite stable enough to drive on the open road yet.
Are your parents, Garen Mayer, listening today?
I don't know if they're listening. They should be heading back. No, they're back home. They should. They're probably listening now, or they'll listen their next road trip. They kind of catch up a lot of times on road trips if they can't catch it during the hour.
Well, you know what? You can always let them know that they can go to our website, oneleftradio.com, to download and listen to our podcast anytime they want.
Yep, so that's what they do.
Always good stuff. And you're not going to want to miss Daniel Tagg today. And you're not going to want to miss Dr. Dan Engel, Truths and Myths on Psychedelics. That includes MDMA, LSD, or psilocybin. We'll ask him that question.
Yeah, I'm really curious to know from an expert.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, stay tuned, everyone. We've got a great show coming up. You're listening to One Life Radio. One Life Radio is brought to you by our sponsors, great companies like Sun Warrior Plant-Based Protein. Use the code OLR for 20% off. Crazy Water, the only mineral water bottled in Texas. Honest Hemp, happy, healthy, honest CBD. Use the code OLR for 20% off. Nature's Plate, plant-based meals to go. Paleo Magazine, Wellbeing Journal, and the International Society of Sports Nutrition. Be sure to go to our Thorne Research Dispensary on our website for 20% off and free shipping. Thank you for listening to One Life Radio. Welcome back to One Life Radio, everyone. This is Bernadette with Diamond Gray, Aviana Barrientos, and Daniel Tagg. Daniel Tagg is an orthokinetic specialist trainer at Telos Fitness Center. He is certified in orthokinetics, biomechanics of resistance training, and muscle activation techniques. Daniel is a licensed massage therapist and holds belts in 3 different martial arts systems, and he was a wildland firefighter. I'm being very particular because they got my tongue all twisted before we went live trying to say truths and myths.
It's hard to put them together. Again.
So everybody out there listening, try to say that. With, you know, of course, we can't hear you, but truths and myths on psychedelics. Yes. Okay, so it's very difficult to say truths and myths together. Right? Yes.
And do it 5 times
quickly. And do it quickly. So anyway, that's a difficult tongue twister, Daniel.
It is.
Daniel Tagg. And speaking of twisting, you know, and exercising and getting out there and moving your body, today we're talking about when and how to do plyometrics, okay? Mm-hmm. So are plyometrics good for everyone to do? And before we begin there, for people that are just now joining us that maybe didn't hear the explanation at the beginning of the show, what are plyometrics?
Explosive movements. Most of the time it's jumping. You know, either like, you know, like a frog jump or one-legged jump or something where you're jumping up and then back down. Those are usually, it's explosive movements or plyometrics.
Yeah. Are we going to go live during the broadcast and show?
Yeah.
And we'll put it, where are we doing? Instagram
Let's
live?
Let's do Instagram.
Instagram live?
One Life Radio.
Oh my God,
One.
Daniel, you're going to be on Instagram live.
That's hilarious.
Use your lips when you
can't close your mouth.
Can't That's close really. Your mouth.
That's, wow.
If you guys could see her.
That's hilarious. And the facial, the eyes show it all.
You should try it.
That was good. I'll try it when I'm not on national radio.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so they are explosive movements.
Yes, that are very good for working explosive fast twitch muscles, which can be very good for sports and everything else. Mm-hmm. But they're not necessarily, if the average Joe just wants to get fit, it's a higher risk thing because you are exploding. You need to be in better shape. Like what we talked about.
I just thought of one. Is it like, you know, we were talking about the NFL. I get so excited about football. I can see a football player right now going back and forth with the legs and the tires. Is that plyometrics?
That isn't necessarily plyometrics.
You know what I'm talking about?
I do know exactly what you're talking about.
Where'd they go?
That's a quick footwork drill
yeah.
is what you're thinking about with the
tires. It's explosive though.
It is, but it's more about quickness versus explosion.
Okay.
And they do that more with the ladder nowadays versus the tires.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not so much the explosion. Explosion would be more like, you know, the lineman coming off the pad, coming off the line and exploding and hitting that dummy, the tackle dummies. That would be a little bit more close to plyometrics.
Nice.
But it's a higher risk thing, so you want to know, you want to have your basic strength, you want to have basic endurance, you want to have, you know, basic stability and mobility, which balance goes in with all that.
Okay.
So you want to have those foundations down before you start to add plyometrics in. If you're going to do an explosive sport or activity, this is very good to do. But you also don't want to do it every single day. You want it like one or two times a week for like 3 to 6 weeks and then cycle it out and then cycle it back in.
Yeah, I used to have to do these explosive jumps with Tina. It was, I'm going to say that I remember it well. It was like a red metal stool about maybe 18 inches square on the top with a black rubber mat. And I would like jump up with both feet onto it, up and down, back and forth. And I have to tell you, you can't do a lot of those without your legs just being on fire.
And your lungs, too. It's a great cardiovascular thing. You will get your heart rate up really quick. And that's the most basic thing that you hear about is box jumps. And you're probably doing it with
box jumps.
Both,
I was.
Yeah, you're doing both legs, which is great. But if you're looking for, if you're going to be doing a sport and you want explosion for a sport, you're never pushing off of both legs at the same time. If you want a good workout, that's awesome. But if you want to relate it more towards sports like football or something, you want to actually explode off of one leg. And then instead of jumping back
let's see this.
Yeah.
Let's go. I don't know how we're going to coordinate this because you're going to hold the camera, Avi.
And
you're going to be off the mic. I'm going to be the only one on the mic.
Yeah,
so
you're going to have to tell.
Diamond, you're going to have to help me. Yeah.
We're going live.
We're going live.
A big part of this, though, is you jump up onto the object and you step down. Okay. Because when you jump back down, that's a high impact on your knees, your hips, your ankles. So if you want to lessen the stress on your joints, explode up onto something and then step down. And I'll show you how to do it with one leg.
Let's show this real quick.
Yeah,
let's see what we're doing here. Yeah. And you can go. I guess you can, you can go into that mic. There you go. All right. So we're going to be, we're going Instagram live. Okay.
But we're going to push off the heel. You're going to get into kind of a good lunge position like you would when you're taking a step and you're exploding to take a stride to run. You're going to come from here right here. Boom. And you come up, you land softly, and then you step back down. So you're getting the explosion of boom, coming up, but then there's very little impact, and you step back down. Versus you do this boom, boom. This is good, but that when you
drop the boom, boom.
That can be really hard on the knees.
Yeah, I bet it.
It's a great workout, but this is a little bit more functional for pushing off, like you would do if you're going to come right here and you're pushing off to start to run.
Right.
Same motion.
That makes sense.
If you want to make it hard, just go boom, step down quick, boom, and do it with the same leg.
Yeah. Diamond can't see you. You can't. Can you see it, Diamond? She can just see you jumping up in the air. Yeah. So
if you want to make it higher, right, you can come up, boom, and then land down.
You're like a little ballerina over there. Did you see that last jump, everyone? That was really good. Yeah. Were you a dancer?
Definitely not.
Definitely not. Well, why do you say it like that? You know that dancing is very, it taps into your creative mind and soul and spirit.
I do, and my creative mind is lacking.
Okay.
It is not my strength.
Well, so you said there's some risk to certain joints and stuff like that with plyometrics. And so what's the best way to lower that risk if you're just starting out?
Exactly what I told you is step down instead of jumping down from whatever you're jumping up onto. So if you're doing like just jumps out in the yard or something, some people just jump up and then land on the ground. So again, there's a good explosive movement, but then landing back on the ground, it's hard. It's high impact on your knees. You got to decelerate that. You're gonna land weird, and you notice I'm out of breath just from doing that.
I know I was gonna say that.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it got your heart rate going. Is this very similar to like I know burpees? I remember Guy Mesger saying that typically even a person in really good shape cannot do more than like 15 burpees if they're doing them correctly.
Yeah, it just
would you agree with that?
Yes, it just takes a lot of energy, which is good. But the biggest thing is jump up onto something, whether you're doing it with one leg or two legs. If you just want a good workout, you can jump up with two. That's perfectly fine. I just think it relates more to sports if you do it off of one.
Well, you know what's funny? funny is so many people think, oh, they got to go to a gym, they got to do all these things. You can find so many places to exercise right in your home.
Oh, yeah. In your home, like we said, for you, just doing those, you can jump up onto the step down from your stairs.
Well, that's where I do my push-ups.
Yeah. So you can do all this stuff at home. Like last week when I was in Colorado, the week before, whatever it was, I would take my bicycle, I'd ride through my town, and then I would go to local jungle gyms and do pull-ups, sit-ups. Then I'd do sprints, and I'd do some plyometrics. I'd find something to jump up onto mm-hmm. and then step back. You can be as creative as you want, but the main thing is jump up onto something and step down and do it one leg at a time and then mix it up with maybe two legs at a time. But don't jump back down. That's going to increase the risk. Now, mm-hmm. there's a certain time where we're trying to get what's called a myostatic stretch reflex, where you hit the ground and you explode right back up. That's good to get that reaction of using that kinetic energy and exploding mm-hmm. back up. But you need to do that. You have to have perfect control to do it, and you want to do very few reps because you don't want to fatigue yourself and have the form go and then put more stress on your mm-hmm. knees and ankles.
Well, what are some good exercises that you can do with them?
So again, I mean, it's really pretty simple. It's essentially
how long should you warm up? I'm looking at the cover of an old Time magazine that I have in here, and it's The Exercise Cure: The Surprising Science of Life Changing Workouts, and they have a guy jumping rope on the front. Jumping mm-hmm. rope is an excellent exercise, isn't it? Especially for warm up.
It is. It's a very good exercise, and I'd say warm up for at least 10 to 15 minutes, you know, do some high knees, do some just regular body weight squats, do some posterior lunges where the back leg is straight and you're not putting weight on that back leg, you know, jog around for a couple minutes if you're outside, if you're inside, you know, do a couple minutes on the bike, but warm up with the kind of movements that you're going to do. If you're going to do a squat jump where you're jumping up, warm up with some squats. If you're going to do a one-legged jump up, then do it with, you know, do some lunges to warm up. And then just you can create things where you can jump laterally into it. You can jump to where you start out lower and then you build up to higher jumps as you get more and more warmed up.
Okay, I've got a great question. Mm-hmm. What's the difference between high-intensity training and plyometrics?
So high-intensity plyometrics are high intensity. So it's how hard your muscle is working with amount of load put on it. So when you're exploding up, that's putting a lot of load immediately into those muscles, mm-hmm. and that is high intensity. High intensity does not necessarily mean you're getting out of breath. Like if you're doing a one rep max, mm-hmm. that is high intensity. Your muscles have to recruit every little fiber to do that. Mm-hmm. You might not be huffing and puffing after that one rep,
yeah.
but it is high intensity for the muscle fibers.
What about sprinting on a spin bike or on a cycle?
So that, again, would be a high-intensity thing depending on if you do more resistance. It's more to do with the resistance mm-hmm. as the true definition of high-intensity. We think of it as something that you're going to be just gassed after. Mm-hmm. That isn't the truest definition, but you would want the resistance to be relatively high.
Right.
And then you would be gassed after yeah. that as well, but it's not synonymous.
When I do my spin bike, I warm up for 2 minutes, then I come up out of the saddle for 15 minutes, and then I sit down and I let my body unwind for another 2 minutes. That's like one of my quickie workouts. What yeah. do you think of that?
Yeah, it's a HIIT workout.
HIIT workout.
Yeah, high-intensity interval training.
All right, yeah. but not plyometrics unless I really hit it hard in between, even harder, or make the tension really tough.
Warm up, and then just the explosion is high-intensity.
Okay.
So you don't have to have a lot of weight on other than your body weight.
All right. Yeah. Daniel Tagg, always great. Talking about exercise with Daniel Tagg. We'll be back, and we've got Dr. Dan Engel, one of my favorite doctors on the show. He is board-certified in psychiatry and neurology. We're going to be talking about the truths and myths on psychedelics. Stay tuned, everyone. You're listening to One Life Radio. One Life Radio is brought to you by our sponsors, great companies like Sun Warrior Plant-Based Protein. Use the code OLR for 20% off. Crazy Water, the only mineral water bottled in Texas. Honest Hemp, happy, healthy, honest CBD. Use the code OLR for 20% off. Nature's Plate, plant-based meals to go. Paleo Magazine, Wellbeing Journal, and the International Society of Sports Nutrition. Be sure to go to our Thorn Research Dispensary on our website for 20% off and free shipping. Thank you for listening to One Life Radio. I love it. A little purple haze, diamond gray. Thank you so much, everyone. Welcome back to One Life Radio. This is Bernadette, as I said, with Diamond Gray, Aviana Barrientos, and Daniel Teggs in studio with us today. And we have Dr. Dan Engel on the line with us. He is a medical doctor and board certified in psychiatry and neurology. His clinical practice combines functional medicine, integrative psychiatry, neurocognitive restoration, and peak performance methods. He is the medical director of the Revive Treatment Centers of America, as well as the medical advisor to Onnit Labs and the True Rest Float Centers. Dr. Engel is the author of The Concussion Repair Manual, A Practical Guide to Recovering from Traumatic Brain Injuries. His website is drdanengel.com, and that's E-N-G-L-E, drdanengel.com. So great to have you with us today. How are you doing today, Dr. Dan?
I'm great, Bernadette. Great to be with you again.
Yeah. And, you know, we last time you were on, and thank you for saying that, we said we were going to talk in more in depth about the truths and myths on psychedelics. So let's talk about this. What are some of the myths that are surrounded by psychedelics?
Well, there's a lot of them out there for sure, and they fall into two camps. Those that believe psychedelics don't have a place and they're dangerous and then everybody's going to get their brains fried, and those that believe that they're panaceas and good for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So we can talk about a few of those in each kind of camp and take them in that order if that works for you.
Yeah, that works great. Well, so, you know, the psychedelics, as you know, they're very intimidating. They really are, especially to someone who has never really experienced it. So can you explain what it feels like when you use psilocybin or psychedelics like MDMA, LSD, or psilocybin?
Well, they're all pretty different, and that's one of the myths, is that not only, you know, a lot of people have this image in their mind that we had from the 1980s and 1990s during the war on drugs, that were drugs, that these medicines were quote-unquote drugs, which I don't believe is an actual fair representation of their therapeutic benefit, and that if you take them, remember the fried egg commercial, that this is going to end up being your brain on
drugs, oh, yeah.
Right? Yeah. So we all have that image still really burned in our psyche. It was really good media for that war on drugs. And part of the blanket statement is that they're all dangerous is also that they all work the same.
Yeah.
And that's very untrue as well. They all have different effects. The feeling state of it is different. How they work in the brain is quite different. The length of duration is quite different. And the data for each of them and how they work for many of the psychiatric conditions, for example, MDMA mm-hmm. is known as the chief component of ecstasy, but street ecstasy is very different because it's all oftentimes cut with a lot of different things.
Oh, yeah.
And when you use it in its pure form in the therapeutic context, it has between a 60 and 70% efficacy rate in treating chronic severe post-traumatic stress disorder.
Which is so fascinating. It's so fascinating. You know, MDMA, I have to say, I've never done it. Kind of scares me. LSD, have never done it. Kind of scares me. Psilocybin, I've done. I absolutely had a most amazing experience with it. And, you know, when it's legal, I would do it again. In fact, I bring up a good question. Is it legal in some states?
Well, just recently, I'm calling from just outside Denver, Colorado. I live in Boulder.
Mm-hmm.
And Denver last month, or actually about closer to 6 to 8 weeks ago, passed the Denver to Decriminalize movement.
That's right.
Which meant that now psilocybin is decriminalized. It's not officially legal,
mm-hmm.
but the police now have it as their lowest priority and have agreed to not prosecute people for small possession in using it for their own medicinal purposes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that doesn't make it legal where you can transport it and have it in even clinics yet, which I see coming for sure in this realm of transformational medicine. These medicines will be eventually legalized in the therapeutic context, just like cannabis was, and then it became recreational. And MDMA and psilocybin are leading that charge right now nationally because they've already been proved for safety. And they're going into phase 3 trials to be proven for efficacy. And this is the last stage in the government trials for full legalization.
Wow. Wow. I read somewhere, I'm trying to pull it up, but I can't put my hands on it, that and I think we've actually discussed this before on the air, that particularly LSD, microdosing with LSD, is very effective in treating alcoholism.
It can be, and for many people has, and it has a fascinating history regarding alcohol use in the United States. One of the founders of the Alcoholics Anonymous organization used LSD to support his ongoing sobriety. This was Bill Wilson. He got sober using mescaline and then continued that sobriety path with LSD. He wanted to use these medicines. This was back in the 50s when they were
mm-hmm.
legal.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted to use these as a part of people's recovery because in the therapeutic context, many of these medicines have very deep healing experiences for the core wounds that oftentimes drive addiction, depression, anxiety, post-traumatic stress disorder. But there's a very big difference between therapeutic use, like in with a facilitator that knows how to support the process, oftentimes a person with some clinical or therapeutic background, that's very different than using it recreationally, oftentimes in a very uncontrolled setting and not really knowing the safety of the container and how the experience is going to unfold.
Mm-hmm. Is it Timothy Leary is the one that made everybody so scared, you know, right? Isn't he the one that started all the, intended here, but the craziness, right?
Yeah, he was an icon in the cultural revolution that was in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. And he was a really genius investigator of these medicines. He was actually working for the government at one time. And then he went really far to the other side of the spectrum in his global advocacy for wide recreational use.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those myths, too, that these medicines are safe for everybody.
Right.
And that they're the only path to waking up. And that at any point, they're going to rescue me or save me from my work to do. So if I just take a trip, it's going to take care of all my alcoholism or depression or anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And truth be known, these medicines, they reveal the truth that is still our work to do. So oftentimes they'll bring up the traumatic material so that we have a chance to work through it.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't save us from the core looking into the dark mirror or going into that shadow material. I think that's where we actually gain the most benefit is when we're able to bring these traumatized parts of ourselves back home into a more full integrated whole.
Mm-hmm. I love talking about this. I find it so fascinating. And I did find what I was looking for. It's from the book, How to Change Your Mind by Michael Pollan. I'm sure you're very familiar with the book, but it's,
correct.
But are you?
Yeah, it's a great book, just legendary in the space, and it was just written at the right time.
Yeah, it was. He says in here on the history of this that, but however it worked, or certainly seemed to, by the end of the decade, LSD was widely regarded in North America as a miracle cure for alcohol addiction. So based on that statement, you know, I'm going to ask you this. For those who don't believe that psychedelics have a place, what do you say to them from a scientific standpoint?
Check out the data. Plain and simple. Like if I'm talking to a group of physicians or a group of doubters, so to speak, the best thing I can do is start from a place of neutrality, a place of curiosity, let them know I'm not trying to sell anything, but I am here, especially if I'm talking to physicians, I am here to show the objective data. And as physicians, we should be interested in the objectivity of the data.
Mm-hmm.
We should be curious about these novel treatments that showed so much efficacy in the 50s, 60s, and 70s until the Nixon administration put everything in Schedule 1, which they don't belong because Schedule 1 means they're highly addictive and most of these medicines are anti-addictive and that there's no therapeutic benefit.
Yeah.
And in fact, that's actually how they work. And they work neurologically in the brain to help recover these traumatic experiences. And with something like LSD or even some of the other medicines that work specifically for addiction recovery, they seem to reset the addictive neurochemistry. And truth be known, we're still figuring out how and exactly why they work in the ways they do. So that's why there's been this massive explosion in psychedelic research in the last 15 years.
Well, and because we need it. We really need it. You know, Daniel wanted to ask you something,
well,
Dr. Dan.
I want to ask a quick question first. For layman like me, where would I go to get legit data versus just Googling it?
Great question.
It is a great question.
Asking that question. The best organization in the United States that has broad-based data for a variety of these different medicines is the MAPS organization, stands, it's an acronym, MAPS.org, stands for the Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies. Mm. It's been in existence for 30 years. Rick Doblin is the founder. He just gave the first TED talk on the large TED stage, so to speak. There's been a bunch of TEDx talks, but he just gave the first TED talk on MDMA for PTSD. And the data is just so good, and it's really compelling, especially if we know the truth of the epidemic, which is 20 to 40 or so veterans commit suicide in the U.S. alone every day from PTSD and a variety of chronic psychiatric conditions. And MDMA has an efficacy rate better than any other known single agent.
Wow.
Now, those the data I gave is 60 to 70% cure rate, not just improvement rate, not just symptom reduction rate, but cure rate after 2 to 3 supported and facilitated MDMA psychotherapeutic sessions with trained clinicians that know what they're doing.
Wow. And that's the key, too. It is trained clinicians that know what they're doing. I'm so fascinated talking about this. If you're just now joining us, I'm on the air with Dr. Dan Engel. He is a board certified in psychiatry and neurology. We're talking about truths and myths on psychedelics. There's more coming up. Stay tuned, everyone. You're listening to One Life Radio. One Life Radio is brought to you by our sponsors, great companies like Sun Warrior Plant-Based Protein. Use the code OLR for 20% off. Crazy Water, the only mineral water bottled in Texas. Honest Hemp, happy, healthy, honest CBD. Use the code OLR for 20% off. Nature's Plate, plant-based meals to go. Paleo Magazine, Wellbeing Journal, and the International Society of Sports Nutrition. Be sure to go to our Thorn Research Dispensary on our website for 20% off and free shipping. Thank you for listening to One Life Radio. Welcome back to One Life Radio, everyone. This is Bernadette with Diamond Gray, Aviana Berrientos, and Daniel Tagg. I've got Dr. Dan Engel on the line. Continuing on, we're talking about psychedelics. Dr. Dan Engel is board certified in psychiatry and neurology. His clinical practice combines functional medicine, integrative psychiatry, neurocognitive restoration, and peak performance methods. He is the medical director of the Revive Treatment Centers of America, as well as a medical advisor to Onnit Labs and True Rest Float Centers. Dr. Engel is the author of the Concussion Repair Manual, a practical guide to recovering from traumatic brain injuries. You can find Dr. Dan Engel at drdanengel.com, and his last name is spelled E-N-G-L-E. That's drdanengel.com. Okay, psychedelic. So many people out there are so fascinated by this subject and interested in what you have to say. So who can potentially benefit tremendously from this type of therapy?
Well, in my experience, just about everybody. Now, it's also important to say that, again, they're not a panacea, and not everybody's either healthy or safe enough to have an experience, number one. And number two is not everybody's ready to have a big experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so the contraindications are if people are on psychiatric medications, most of the medicines we're speaking about don't interact well. If people have a clear history of psychosis or mania, it's usually a dangerous situation.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a readiness component about it as in addition. So these are strong experiences. And like with any tool, you can use it well,
mm-hmm.
or you can use it carelessly. Or like with any anything that builds life, water, light, nutrition, et cetera, it has its therapeutic sweet spot. If you don't use enough, there's no effect. If you use too much, it's poisonous. So we have to use them right. And in the right setting, I would say that the vast majority of people can have a meaningful experience. And this is some of the data that came out of, we were speaking about psilocybin earlier.
Mm-hmm.
John Hopkins did a great study over about 10 years ago now with people that had never had an experience with psychedelics and went into a psilocybin experience and process and then came out the other side And 94% of people said it was one of the most meaningful experiences that they ever had.
I'm in that 94%. You know, I did it with a PhD. I did it with a PhD and other a couple of other people that I really trusted. It was a small group of us. And I did it in little tiny increments, like very, very, because I have a brother that's schizophrenic. So I had a lot of fear of like having like delusional thoughts or like, you know, they always say, oh, if you do LSD, don't look in the mirror, you know, you'll see your face melting and stuff. I was like, oh, my gosh, you know, I didn't want any of that crazy stuff going on. So I was really very apprehensive, but I was in a very good place. And you'll understand this being into sensory deprivation and flotation therapy. I had been floating for a couple of years before I decided to try psilocybin. And I had an amazing trip. We've talked about it many times on the air, you and I. And I would recommend it to pretty much anyone if they do it correctly.
Yeah. Agreed. And you mentioned a couple of things that I think are really important to highlight is that there are preparatory practices that can really help people become familiar with the unknown. And that's part of what these medicines offer is they offer us the subconscious material to come up onto the screen of the mind so that we can look at it. And we also don't know what's going to come up. So it's getting more comfortable and available to be curious about the unknown. And flotation tanks are really good in that regard.
Oh, yeah.
Because they help us start to auto-regulate, be able to self-reference and work with our own fears, not freak out, find our breath, come back to our center. And then the other thing that you mentioned is that the doorway into these experiences I see as being one of two different directions. One is a direction of healing. And so if somebody knows that they have an experience with depression, anxiety, PTSD, addiction, pain, then these medicines can be very good for healing, and they can also be very good for optimization. And that's supporting the worried well, so to speak, or like most of the Western neuroses, where we think we're doing pretty okay, but there's still stuff to learn. There's still stuff to experience. And connecting with the divine aspects of ourselves or the connected life that is this one planet that we call home, there's so many different ways that even if you're not going for quote-unquote healing, that experience can engender one of the most meaningful experiences that people ever have.
Yeah, I, you know, as I said, I shared my story with everyone, and you know, there's so many things that we're so unaware of, you know, and this is one of them. And so the science that you're doing, where do you see this going in the near future?
Well, the future of medicine work in this regard is really endless. And that's why it's important to do it mindfully and do it well. And so that we want to make sure that we're offering the right education and advocacy. So I think it was a great question that Daniel brought up around where to go for the right, clear, objective data. Mm-hmm. MAPS is one. Hopkins has done a lot of really good research. ICEERS is another organization. There's a bunch of new conferences coming up every year about the newest data. So there's this resurgence. We want to make sure that people are, if they're using on their own, and a lot of people are, there's some studies that suggest close to 90% of all people throughout part of their life are going to explore psychedelics. And mm-hmm. if that's the case, then obviously we need to have a conversation about it because most people are doing it. And then we need to have people with enough information to do it safely, to do it responsibly, so that we're not giving more data to the doubters that might not want this research or advocacy work to be included in the larger cultural landscape. But what I see is really promoting a huge resurgence in the research is that we are in the midst of growing psychiatric epidemics, mm-hmm. depression, anxiety, PTSD, addiction, and pain. All five of those are ever increasing, even in the arena of using more and more pharmaceuticals. We need to look for novel treatments that help get to the core issue and start to resolve those core traumas. And I don't know of a more effective, efficient, and safe, when done well, therapeutic modality than the use of these medicines. So I just see it growing into a realm of legality so that we're going to eventually be able to launch the clinics where multiple medicines are available to a person coming in to the front door, and they say, yes, I want to have a healing experience or I want to have an optimization experience, and looking through the menu of services with trained providers and really clear assessment tools, being able to assess which medicine is going to be good for which person at which time and which order of their healing arc.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're just going to get better and better with the research and with the clinical implementation in the outpatient setting of a legal therapeutic arena in which to do this. And I think that's the most responsible way that the medical community can continue to make these medicines available.
Mm-hmm. I would agree. And we're almost out of time. I think we're going to run out of time before I make this point. I was reading in Michael Pollan's book, How to Change Your Mind, about Catherine McLean, the former Hopkins researcher who wrote the landmark paper on openness, hopes someday to establish a psychedelic hospice, a retreat center somewhere out in nature where not only the dying but their loved ones can use psychedelics to help them let go, the patient and the loved ones both. And it quotes her by saying, if we limit psychedelics to just the patient, she explains, we're sticking to the old medical model, but psychedelics are more radical than that. I get nervous when people say they should only be prescribed by a doctor. What do you say to that? You've got like 30 seconds, Dr. Engel.
I think ultimately that's true, but I don't think we're ready for large stage recreational use because I don't think we've yet put in the education and advocacy implementation at a widespread level. I think what she just lined out is the vision we're going for, definitely.
All right.
I don't think we're quite ready for it yet.
I love it. It is so good. Thank you so much for jumping on the air with us today. What a pleasure. Everyone, thank you for listening. We love doing the show. And you know what? You get one body, you get one mind, and you get one life. Get out there today and make the most of it.